Welcome to Straight Thinking, a GPS for the Christian mind, teaching you how to think, not just what to think. This is Joe Aguirre with theologian and philosopher Kenneth Samples and physicist Dave Rogstad. On today's podcast, part two of two on human freedom and God's sovereignty, how do we make sense of God's sovereignty? And Ken, we covered a lot of ground, on the last podcast. Dave and I always feel like it's a great learning experience, and it's a pleasure to listen to these ideas. Now you're going to get into a little bit more of the questions that people might have in mind when it comes to our freedom and God's sovereignty and how all that works out.
Yes, our last program looked very specifically at this theological mystery and challenge of how is the human will affected by sin? So is salvation something we can grasp? We also looked at the question of once we have received the grace of God, could we then still resist it? And we looked at four perspectives. In this program, I want to look at the question more generally. I want to look at things that show us that we're not in control, that we're not the captain of our ship, and yet we're still responsible. That this tension, this mystery between these forces that are givens, if you will, and then our own responsibility within that context. So I want to look more generally at the mystery of God's sovereignty and human responsibility or the human will.
Ken, a question comes to mind, and if this isn't the place to cover it, you can say hold off, but sometimes the skeptic will chime in with God has not revealed himself sufficiently. You talked about mystery in the last podcast and how because God is God and we're not, some of these things are mysterious. The skeptic might say it's too mysterious. God should reveal himself if he wants us to make a decision to follow him. So I don't know if you want to touch on that or that's you have in the past on many other podcasts, but for the sake of those who are new to the podcast and in this context, if you want to.
Yes, I think that's quite appropriate. I see that all the time on social media, and I read it in books that skeptics and atheists write. They'll sometimes say, you know, well, if I were God, I could have done a better job. I wouldn't have left it so mysterious. I would have, I remember Carl Sagan, why doesn't he just write it on the, in the sky? I'm God, here I am. I think what's interesting, of course, about that is that sometimes human beings think they can do things better than God. And I realize that as a non-Christian, as a non-believer, maybe an atheist, you might think, well, look, all of this religious ideas, it's all nonsense. And I, within my rights of kind of poking holes in that kind of thing, but I would kind of come back to people like St. Augustine and St. Thomas Aquinas and Luther and Calvin and Athanasius. Some of these great thinkers that are associated either with Orthodoxy or Catholicism or Protestantism. And I think what we see in all of those great Christian thinkers, and if you want to add Wesley and Arminius, that's good too. It is this, that God is an infinite eternal being. That's who he's revealed himself to be. He revealed himself to the children of Israel. And he communicated with them through miracles and through signs. And in that Old Testament revelation, God began to communicate that he was going to send a Messiah, a Savior. And I think of reading, in the past Christmas season, reading Isaiah, that there is this coming Messiah. The birth of Jesus, he comes into the world. His remarkable life, death, and resurrection, and then the apostolic writing of these gospels to set forth these ideas. So I think what we see in people like Augustine and Aquinas, in Luther, in Calvin, in John Wesley, in Athanasius, etc., is they realize that God is infinite and eternal. He has no limitations and boundaries. I mean, what is it like? I mean, it takes my breath away to say that God knows all things, that God is everywhere present, that God has all power, that God is a maximally perfect being, an unsurpassably holy and loving being. I think I'm staggered by it. It should lead us to a sense of worship of who this being is. You know, there are atheists who come along and say, I think the whole idea that you would worship anything is absurd. It's wrong. But what if this God is complete and utter truth? What if this God is complete and utter beauty, that he is just and holy and righteous and all powerful? I think the appropriate thing is to fall on our knees. I think what's inappropriate is to genuflect to things that lack all of those unsurpassable qualities. Now, again, this question of mystery, we have to accept God on his terms. You know, the problem here is if I were inventing all of this, then I might maybe be able to make it a little easier. I might be able to present something, but as C.S. Lewis says, we're not making it up. We have received it. And if mystery makes you uncomfortable, you'll be uncomfortable within Christianity. But mystery is not a contradiction, and mystery doesn't mean that we don't have reliable knowledge, and mystery doesn't do any damage to reason. I mean, you know, I like, my wife and I, we like to go on vacations, and you know, there, we live in America, this great country that has so much natural beauty and has so much entertainment and learning, and I'm a museum kind of guy. I like to go to museums. I have fun at museums. Some people can't relate to that. But my wife, you know, she loves the national parks. When I first met her, she wanted to be a park ranger. And, you know, I could see her eyes light up when she goes up to Yosemite or Yellowstone. I can see the anxiety drop off her. She just loves the animals and the natural beauty. Well, you have to accept God on his terms. And when I go to those vacations, they're always good, but I'm never totally satisfied. You know, with God, you're never going to be dissatisfied. You're never going to get to the end of God. That's why I love these great books. That's what I love about the Bible. I can never get to the end of the book of Romans. I can never get to the end of the Gospel of John. Every time I go back, it's like, I've read this dozens of times, but it takes me further. You know, in the beatific vision, when we stand in the presence of God, now I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know what that's going to smell like. I don't know what kind of reality it will be, but to be intimate with the triune God, to be face to face with God, to be face to face with an unsurpassably just, holy, and loving God, a God who has no boundaries. You know, I look at the United States and I think, how are we going to, you know, you want to have all these policies. Well, how are you going to pay for them all? I want to see the budget when it comes to God. You know, he's got a budget that he can provide for all of this. So, Joe, to answer your very good question, is I think these great Christian thinkers would say we accept God on his terms, and we start with his sovereignty and our limitations and boundaries as creatures.
Good.
All right. Well, let me talk a little bit about some things. And again, we've delved into these issues before, but you know, we do have new people who come to our program, and so I like to return to topics, and sometimes I return to them because there's just so much there. I don't think we've really, you know, we've only made a dent in them.
Yeah. Also, it really helps to hear things, read things over and over. Yeah. You know, we're human to talk about our finiteness again. And sometimes we just need to get it from various angles, various times before it sinks in.
That's exactly right. I mean, I have a bit of a commute to work. When I drive to RTB, sometimes it's an hour, sometimes it's an hour and a half.
Mm.
But when I listen to books on tape, sometimes I get 3 hours of learning, 3 hours of hearing in a single day, you know, and I'm driving in Southern California is never easy and getting worse. But yeah, I love to hear things over and over. So I don't apologize for resurrecting some of these topics for you. Well, let me address this topic. Excuse me. Are there things outside of our control? And of course, the answer to that is yes. But let me talk about 5 things that are outside of our control. And I want you, as we identify and explain these things, I want you to think of how the depth of these things, how significant are these things? The first one is simply this. I was thinking about this the other day, that none of us have a say in whether we were conceived and born into the world. Nobody ever got my permission. Nobody checked with me. I had no say. When we talk about the human will, I had no contribution of my human will when my parents conceived me. And when I was born into the world, you know, long before I could make choices in life, somebody else's choices affected me. And, you know, think about that. As a philosopher, I think, wow, what a given. The fact that I'm even here, I had no say in it. I had no decision in it. You know, I might have said, well, you know, it would have been better if I came from a little higher socioeconomic family. Maybe it'd been a lot nicer if I had more unselfish siblings. I might have had all kinds of things that I might. Well, wait a second. I'm not sure I want to buy that. I had no say in it at all. And you know, there have been people who've said, "Why am I thrown into this? Why am I thrown into this world? Why am I here?" I remember Jean-Paul Sartre, the great French atheist philosopher. He says, we live in a meaningless universe and there is no exit.
Mm.
Well, that's the first point, that, you know, our existence is totally outside of our control and our choice. Therefore, think about your parents. I mean, I've been thinking more about my parents. My father has died in 1985, so he's been gone a long time. And my mother died in 2007, and you know, that's more than a decade. And I think back to them, and as I get older myself, I think about the shaping experiences that my parents had upon me. And I think about many of the things that I would never have, I would really never have done without them. And, you know, when we think about psychology, when we think about biology, when we think about criminal law, we think about, well, how was that person shaped? When we think about the law, was that person really responsible for what they did? What a huge given, the very fact that you exist. Now, from a Christian point of view, of course, we say, well, it was the Lord. The Lord is behind all of this, and I'm not the captain of my ship. I discovered that very personally in 2003 when I was very sick. I realized that from one day to the next, in just one day, my life was turned upside down. I went from, you know, being, I thought, healthy and, you know, having a lot of plans. And then I'm taken to the emergency room because I am exhibiting symptoms, and I'm told this might be it. You know, you may die. And then, of course, think about all of our contexts the last couple of years with COVID, with this pandemic. It's amazing to me how a virus could bring the world to a halt. I mean, whether you agree with how the politicians have responded it or how the medical personnel have handled it, wow, a virus can show us the limitations and boundaries of our humanity. So that first one, that first given, that we have no say, that we are conceived and born into the world. Now, let me make another one here. We have no say as to when we were born into the world. I mean, you know, I love history, and I wonder what it would be like to have lived in the Old Testament era. I wonder what it would be like to have lived during the time of Christ, to actually have been there in Galilee and have heard the Lord Jesus, and to have seen the color of his hair, maybe even gone up to him and shook his hand. Would I feel the calluses of him being a carpenter? Or what if I were able to go to the Council of Nicaea, 325 AD, or live in the Roman Empire, or in the Middle Ages? Of course, my life might be very different. You know, Thomas Aquinas lived to be 49 years old. Your lifespan could be very different. And talk about pandemics. What if you lived in the time of the plague? You know, so when we were born, we have no say as to when we were born into the world. And here is one that struck me. I included in my discussion of this in chapter 5 of Christianity Cross-Examined. I point out that 80% of the males who were born in the Soviet Union in 1923 were killed in World War II. Now, mm-hmm. now think about that. Here is a whole generation of young men. Here's a whole generation of boys, babies that are born in 1923, and 80% of them were wiped out in World War II. Now, why is that? Well, because they turned 18 in 1941. And 1941 in the summer, Operation Barbarossa, the German army attacked the Soviet Union. And within 3 months, 3 million Russian soldiers were killed. Hmm. So these are raw recruits right out of high school. Probably a lot of them didn't have any high school, and they're put up at the front, and 80% are wiped out. Wow. Now, both of you know how much I'm interested in particularly World War II. But you know, when I used to talk to my dad, I remember being a boy and I just said, "Dad, there's something that's hard for me to understand." I said, "You are obviously aware that you could be killed. Maybe any of the days, any combat experience you had, it could lead to your death." I said, how do you function? And my dad said something to me. He said, "Well," he goes, I stopped giving a damn." Hmm. And I think what he meant by it is, he said, "You know, I figured I was dead anyway. I'm, you know, here I am in this world war, and it's at one of the worst times of the war. And I figure I see my friends get killed, and I just accept that this is my lot in life." And he said that it kind of gave him a freedom, if you will. He said, "I just did my job." And, you know, a lot of soldiers feel that way. I remember reading a bit about C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien, that there's a type of fatalism that almost kind of grips you in the war. And my dad was very fond of saying, "Well, when your number's up." And I thought, wow, you know, probabilities and luck and fate and chance and all of these kind of things. It's very common for soldiers that are in combat, before they leave, they might go out and act recklessly, have, meaningless sexual relations, or go out and have these thrills because they figure, I may not be coming back. Well, think about being a young man born in Russia, born in the Soviet Union in 1923. You were doomed to suffer. You're going to have a short life, and it was going to be ended in violence. Mm. Now, they didn't. Did they have any choice in that? That's a remarkable thing. So one, we don't have any choice in being born into the world, being conceived and born. We have no choice about when we were born into the world. Then we can say we have no say where on earth we're born and where we grow up. I mean, imagine this. Imagine you're born in Israel, or you were born in Italy, or you're born in Iran. Joe, do you see that alliteration going on there?
I got it.
taught me well. Well, think about that. What if I were born in Israel? What if I were born in Italy or Iran? Might that affect my choice or my involvement in religion? Would I, for example, if I were born in Italy, would I be born in a Jewish family? Would I be part of the Jewish community? If I were born in Italy, would I be Christian, Catholic? If I were born in Iran, what's the chances I would be a Muslim? And so the idea here is, again, sometimes atheists make the case, the charge that, religion is just based upon probabilities, because if you were born in a part of the world, you believe that religion opposed to another. Of course, I wonder if you couldn't return it and say, well, is your skepticism or atheism just a result of where you were born? The parents you were born and things of that nature. But it's interesting to me that you have, in this context, a lot of the ideas you're exposed to, you again don't have any say in any of that. Now let me move a little further. We can also say the siblings you have, your family experience. We didn't mention things like your genetics, your background, and then we could add on top of all these things about our birth, we could talk about our death. Most of us don't have any control over how we die, what illnesses. I mean, my daughter is a nurse, and she was talking to me the other day that, medically you can look at your genetic background, and they can propose that, well, you might be susceptible to this illness or to that illness. And we don't have control over our death. I mean, I was thinking about the other day, when people experience COVID, some of them recover, some don't. And then during this last couple of years, some of us have lost family members, loved ones. We weren't even able to say goodbye to them. I mean, if you again go back to this idea of, are you the captain of your own ship? And when you talk about libertarian freedom, that I have the capacity to choose or not choose, I'm not gonna debate you about how you understand libertarian freedom and these events outside your control. But what I want for Christian people and non-Christian people to recognize how many of the things are outside of our control, and how profound they are. I mean, the worldview that you have, the ideas you were initially exposed to. It's true, you may go off to college and throw off what your parents taught you. And, you might go to India and worship Krishna, or you might go to one of the European nations and become an adamant Marxist. You may go in many different directions, but think of all the profound things that you have no control over. And you know what? You have no say about coming into the world, and you have no say about leaving the world. And I, with all due respect to my transhumanist friends, I don't think Google's going to be able to solve death. So these are what I would call the givens in life. And they are profound. And I think what maybe we can do as Christians is we can begin to say, maybe this is a way of thinking about the sovereignty of God. For us as Christians, we believe that there is an infinite, eternal, tripersonal being God. He has all the omnis. He's perfectly holy. He has all power, all knowledge, all wisdom. He is present at all parts of reality. And he brought the universe into existence. And it is his sovereignty that allowed Adam and Eve to be born. And we are the progeny of Adam and Eve. And he has a place and a plan for us. I mean, when you think about the idea that we're contingent, we're dependent. I can't bring myself into existence. I'm dependent upon an act that was done before I was even born. I like to watch old TV programs. So old TV programs are for me are, 1950s, 1960s. And I'll talk with my wife or my son and say, I remember that actor. And he was my first favorite cowboy. And, this show was before that show. And look where this actor ended up. But there are times where I say, wow, this was filmed before I even existed, before I set foot on this earth. I think what this might help us with is to realize that we are creatures. We are dependent. We are contingent. We are dependent upon God. There are things that are outside of our control. Now, I'm not saying that we don't have some sense of freedom, some sense of moral responsibility. But I am saying there are a lot of things outside of our control, and that might lead us back to God. And it may lead us to say, Lord, how dependent I am upon you. How gracious, even though I couldn't plan out all these things, you have. And it may also lead us to be humble and to say, wow, maybe you're not the captain of your own ship. And maybe I ought to be more grateful in the life I lead. Maybe I ought to be aware that this life is fleeting. This life is temporary. We're here a very short time. I remember one comedian, Jerry Seinfeld, he said, human life are like raindrops on a windshield. Well, they're there and then they're gone. Scripture talks about a mist, right? It's there and then it's gone. Maybe there are a lot of things that we can learn from these givens. Maybe it will make us more humble. Maybe it will make us more devout. But it may also make us think, given that I am the object of all these givens, maybe I ought to think for myself. Maybe I ought to be aware that there are things in life like biases. Maybe I ought to check and challenge things. Maybe I ought to try to do more thinking for myself and be very responsible in the way I look at these kinds of things. The fact that there are all these givens might then make us more effective in the way we navigate the life in which we live.
I appreciate your comments, Ken. I'm thinking of, a skeptic who might say something like, in human history, one could see the need to appeal to a deity because of ignorance and the way life was. But we are in a digital, scientifically enlightened age where anybody can get an education. We're self-determining. We make our own decisions. But what you're saying is, hey, look, in the biggest things of life, you still didn't have any say in that. The fact that you were born, where you were born, who your parents are, you know, all those kinds of things. You could even add, you know, whether the sun comes up tomorrow. Nobody has control over that. So it does, at least sitting here listening to that, it should give us a pause to, you know, to think about those things.
I think exactly right. I mean, it should give us perspective, Joe. It's true that, you know, I think of my son, Michael. I think of your son, your two sons. I mean, your two sons and my son, Dave, your sons, they've grown up with the internet, at least maybe your youngest son, Dave, Daniel. And, you know, they're exposed to a lot of things. I mean, there are times where we'll have dinner conversations and a topic will come up and my son will talk about it at length. And I'm thinking, where'd you get all that? What? Oh, I read, you know, I'm on the internet and I was delving into that kind of thing. In fact, one discussion, my daughter, who is a nurse, was talking about a medication and my son knew more about it because he'd just been just going through all the details. And she was like, I had to study hard to know that, you know, you're fooling around on the internet and you picked it up. Well, your point's a very profound one, Joe. We do live in a profoundly, there's lots of educational opportunities. There is lots of science and technology. We are the beneficiaries of, you know, computers and all of these remarkable things like the internet. And yet we're only here in light of all those givens. We're only here because things were done behind the scenes. And again, it could be that we are biased. I mean, think about it for a moment. Imagine if you were born into a family that took the Ku Klux Klan philosophy of life seriously. Or what if you were born into a Muslim family where ISIS was the way of doing it? Or what if you were born into a radical communist, maybe North Korea? Of course, the secularists may say, well, what if you were born in the totalitarian evangelical Christian family? But the reality is that even if you were able to separate yourself from a philosophy of racial discrimination like the Klan, or of radical Islam like ISIS, or a totalitarian philosophy like Nazism or communism, think of what those things do to you. Think about how they shape you. I remember meeting a fellow who was kind of a leading theological thinker within Jehovah's Witnesses. He'd actually studied Greek and Hebrew. He was a pretty sharp guy. He was difficult when I argued with him about the Trinity. He later left the Watchtower. And he said, you know, I'm no longer a witness, but I still can't accept the Trinity. It's just been born into my being and soul that that's not right. And I thought, wow, our experiences, they shape us, right? Let me throw another one at you here. I was watching television. This was a couple of years ago. And there was a program about Columbine, and it focused on the mother of Klebold, one of the mass murderers. And it was one of the best programs I've seen in many years. She really agonized. This is the mom of Dylan Klebold, who was one of the shooters there in Columbine. And she just, For a number of years, she was introspective. What did I do? What is it I didn't do? Am I responsible for this? And I mean, you could tell her sincerity. You could tell how deeply sorrowful she was about what had happened. And she ultimately said, you know, the only way I could continue to live my life is I had to conclude that I didn't have complete control over my son, that there were choices that he made. And they were inconsistent with my philosophy of life. But again, you think about that, right? Anybody who's heard me talk very long knows I'm interested in John F. Kennedy and the life of Kennedy and maybe even specifically the assassination of President Kennedy. And I've listened, I was listening to a book on tape written by two political assistants of Kennedy, Kenny O'Donnell, and O'Donnell was he didn't hold the position of chief of staff, but he was probably as close as anybody to that position in the Kennedy White House. And, you know, he was talking about the last day he saw JFK, and he was in the car, a couple cars back when Kennedy was killed in Dallas. And he was talking about all the things that Kennedy was planning for his next term. You know, he was going to beat Goldwater. And, you know, they had signed the nuclear test ban freeze. And he had lots of plans about staying out of Vietnam. He had plans about the economics. And yet there's a man in a building holding a Mannlicher Carcano rifle. And all of the Secret Service and all of the Dallas police and the most protected man in the world is shot down at 12:30, you know, in Dallas, Texas. And the leader of the free world is gone. How many things are outside of our control? You know, the one of the Secret Service men that jumped off the car and went up and jumped on the back of Kennedy's car, Clint Hill, who I consider a remarkable person, still living, by the way. You know, he was trying to get there. He probably saved Jacqueline Kennedy's life. She was about to tumble outside the car. I think she went into shock and was actually trying to pick up a piece of the president's skull that had gone back on the back of the car. And many people think had Clint Hill not been there to put her back in the seat, she probably would have tumbled out and been run over by the Secret Service car. Well, Clint Hill went through, what if I were there a few seconds earlier? What if I had run faster? What if this, what if that? And then he had a lot of guilt, became an alcoholic. And then later in life, he went back to Dallas and he began to see that, you know, everything was working in Oswald's favor that day. We got off the car because JFK didn't like Secret Service agents around him all the time. He wanted to be talking to people, and we were about to get on the freeway, so agents would never have been there anytime. And it was just the right sequence. Well, how many of these things do we have control? I mean, you know, we hope to live a long life. We have plans. You know, we'd like to do this and do that and see all these remarkable things for our family and our friends. But in reality, we're not the captain of our own ship.
And we die.
And we die. and we die. And I think it brings us back then to one of the positives of Christian theology, this idea of providence, that God is control. It's mysterious how he controls these things. It's mysterious how he develops these things. You know, in my own life, I was working at the Christian Research Institute, and somebody told me, yeah, we're going to bring this guy over. He's a scientist. He's going to talk about science faith issues. And who walks in? Hugh Ross. So I start talking with him a little bit, and some of the guys at CRI were young earthers, but I was an old earther. So I told Hugh, you know, don't take these criticisms seriously. You know, those who really know like your view. Of course, there are many brilliant young Earth people. And sometimes, as much as we disagree, we still disagree. But I had a little candid discussion with Hugh, and I encouraged him, and I said, I like your ministry, I like what you're doing. You know, we appreciate you here. And I was aware there was controversy about the old Earth, young Earth. Well, I didn't know it at the time, but it had an impression on Hugh. And almost a decade later, he calls me up out of the blue. And I'm like, oh, Hugh, yeah, how are you? How are things going? And you know, so he says, yeah, I'm just checking in with you. By the way, would you like a job? And I'm like, like a what? You know, you begin to think, how does God work behind the scenes of our life with all these givens? We are responsible. We should be discerning. We should be reflective. We should be thinking about bias and prejudice. We should think about how sin blinds us. But we should also be grateful and thankful and joyful that the Lord, he is behind all this. He does work out these things. I remember when I got married to my wife, Joan, our passage that we emphasized that was on the marriage invitation that we sent out was Romans 8:28, that it is God who works all things together for good for those who love him, those who are called according to his purpose. You know, I think the fact that I met my wife was a God thing.
Mm.
It seemed kind of, you know, kind of random. I mean, we were in the same class. I was 2 years ahead of her. I was a senior. She was a sophomore. We were in the same class, but I didn't know her and she didn't know me. I knew her brother. And then things changed in my life, and I began to be interested in Christianity, and I went back to the only church I knew. It was the local Catholic church, Holy Family. And she attended, and we went to the same charismatic Catholic prayer meeting. I thought, I think I know who you are. And, you know, then this magical relationship happened. And out of that came these remarkable people, my daughter, Sarah, my daughter, Jacqueline, my son, Michael, that God is working behind the scenes of our life. And so, you know, maybe today you're listening to my voice and you're saying, you know, some of those Calvinists, they're always pushing this sovereignty of God. They're always pushing this view that God is in control. I would just say, think about how important that is in light of issues like the givens. And for my Reformed friends, who sometimes have a, you know, they think that, boy, you give yourselves, you Arminian Wesleyans, you sure give yourselves a lot of freedom. Think that we also, though, make real choices in life. I mean, however we solve the sovereignty, human responsibility, we are agents who perform acts in our life. And I think, Joe and Dave, this discussion, I hope will lead us to maybe be a little bit more humble toward people we disagree with, but also to make us more thankful to the Lord. You know, there are a lot of things that could have gone very wrong in my life. And I think the grace of God was at work, even when I didn't know it. So these are some ideas. You know, as I wrote that chapter in Christianity Cross-Examined, again, the title of that chapter purposely and intentionally was this: aren't theological mysteries just logical contradictions? And what I tried to do in that chapter is to say Christianity is a religion of mystery, but it's also a religion of reason. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons I'm very fond of those great church fathers who lived many centuries ago is that they valued reason and they valued the biblical text and divine revelation. And so when it comes to these kinds of issues, I hope that it will be encouraging to you that Yeah, you didn't have a choice whether you were born into the world. You didn't have a choice about where you were born, the parents you would get, the genetics you would adopt. And by the way, worldview, most worldviews are first adopted and then hopefully reevaluated by the individual person. But the God of the Bible is also the God of history. He is the sovereign king and ruler. And these are great truths. They're not just truths we debate with other Christians we disagree with. These are truths that are a critical part of our everyday life. And so I want to encourage our listeners, maybe go back and take a look at that chapter and think about mystery and think about God's sovereignty and think about you made in the image of God with remarkable capacities. You are an exceptional being, and yet you're broken and fallen by sin and now redeemed by grace.
You know, let me just make the comment that I made to you personally earlier today, and that is, in preparation for these shows, I was reading this chapter and just was so blessed by the way in which Ken, you have presented this material and with such insight and clarity. And I just was so blessed to know that we have here at Reasons to Believe people like yourself who are able to put this down in a way that can really help people. And I strongly urge people to get this book and read it and reflect on it. I think it's just a great work that you've put together here.
Well, I really appreciate that, Dave. And again, you know, one of the things I want our listeners to know is that we've been doing straight thinking a lot of years now, more than a decade, and how much I rely upon you, Joe, and you, Dave. You guys do a lot of work to make this podcast possible. And, you know, the books that I write, Dave, I think for every book, you have been one of the critical readers, you know, who said, hey, here's what I would do a little different here. I like this part, change that part. And then I don't think there's any books I've written since I've come to RTB that Joe didn't have some involvement with editing it and working through it. And, you know, I like to say we're three P's in a podcast.
Ooh, there you go. Thanks for your thoughts, Ken. We really appreciate that. I'm sure our listeners will as well. If you don't have the book, as Dave said, please get one now. Christianity Cross-Examined, subtitle, Is It Rational, Relevant, and Good? By Ken Samples. Very readable, and you will love having read it. Ken, you've written other books, and people continue to let us know about them. Here's one. It says, I really appreciate your book, A World of Difference. That was the first I'd ever heard of abductive reasoning. Randy Voges. So thank you for that comment, Randy. Here's somebody who appreciates your thinking, Ken. I was so privileged to sit under your tutelage for nearly 20 years at Christ Reformed Church in Anaheim. You are by far the most impactful teacher I have had in my life, Les Conard. So that's a wonderful compliment. I think I know, I remember who Les is. I don't know if you do as well, Dave, but he's a great guy. So thank you for that one.
He was my karate teacher, by the way. So I always called him.
Yes. Sir. Yeah. There you go. All right. So thank you for that. Keep those compliments coming. And we'll give you a shout out here on the podcast. You can reach Ken via his Twitter handle at RTB_CaseSamples. Don't miss any episodes of Straight Thinking. We've done over 500 of these, Ken. You mentioned it's been a lot of years. So over 500, we're not tired yet. You can subscribe to the Reasons to Believe podcast on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, and Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You'll get an episode delivered to you each week. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this one. For Ken Samples and Dave Rogstad, this is Joe Aguirre with a reminder that the goal of apologetics is not victory, but truth. Thanks for listening, and join us for the next edition of Straight Thinking.
Thank you for listening. Your prayers and financial support are reaching people with reasons for faith in Jesus Christ, our Creator and Savior. To allow Reasons to Believe programs like this to continue, make your gift today at reasons.org.